Welcome, everybody. And it is February 14th. Going back in time. Yeah, May 14th. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 101A. And I saw somebody in the audience. It's Senator Devlin. Would you like to come up?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Senator Richard Devlin, Senate District 19. I want to thank you again for giving me this opportunity to come here and testify in support of Senate Bill 101A. Senate Bill 101 comes to you from the Senate floor on a 20-9 vote. This bill received bipartisan support. SB 101 is the product of countless hours, and I will underline the word countless because they truly were, spent by state parks, ATV rider groups, Senator Metzger's office, my staff, and I want to particularly give credit to my chief of staff, Anna Haley, and one of my part-time staff, Patrick Mulligan, who probably know more about ATVs than they probably ever wanted to in their life and could probably spot the average ATV at 100 yards and tell you how many cc's it was and what model it was. But as we all know, ATV riding has become a very popular sport in Oregon. Along with this increase in popularity, Oregon has also seen an increase in the accidental death and injury rate. According to a 6-year study by Richard Mullins at Oregon Health Sciences University, patients injured riding off-road vehicles and needing treatment in Oregon's trauma centers increased by 76%. From 1990 to 2005, 25 Oregon children under ages 18 years of age died as a result of crashes on all-terrain vehicles. Some of those were on the previous 3 wheels, some were on the 4. Oregon needs to address improved safety requirements for this increasingly popular sport. More than a quarter of the states have already taken steps in improving safety requirements for youth ATV riders. The bills aim to make ATV riding a safer sport here in Oregon. One of the things I'd like to say here before I highlight some of the aspects of the bill is that in our Senate committee hearing, and I'm sure some of the parties are here too, Ms. Mitten, who was like the spokesperson for a lot of the ATV groups, they were obviously opposed to some of the other ATV legislation that was proposed in this session. But we worked very closely with them, and they came in unanimously in support of what's before you here today. Though I never do expect anything before the legislature to maintain unanimous support longer than 24 hours. The three parts that I would like to highlight about what this bill does, the first part is permit and training requirements for Class 1 and Class 3 ATVs. Under this bill, under 16 must complete safety training course and carry a rider permit by 2009. All operators must meet this requirement by 2014. There is an exception, however, for a rider 16 years and older with 5 years or more experience who can pass an equivalency exam. I should let you know also that we will soon approve a budget in my subcommittee for state parks that actually includes all of the funding for the programs that I've just described, and that it's all funded and it has the co-chair's approval, and we do anticipate it will be approved through the subcommittee in the fall. Mandatory supervision. One of the things that ATV user groups, some of the advocates for improved safety have always identified is the need for more adult supervision for young people riding ATVs. This would simply strengthen some of those requirements. It requires operators of ATVs under the age of 16 to be supervised by someone 18 years or older who also has an operator permit. The supervisor must be able to provide also immediate assistance and direction to the youth. It is our hope that by improving this requirement, for supervision of young people riding ATVs, that we will reduce the amount of accidental injury and hopefully reduce the number of deaths that occur in here in Oregon. The final item, and I think this item needs to be understood very clearly, is we came to agreement on what has been commonly referred to as best rider fit guidelines in terms of them in concept. Best fit rider fit guidelines are some things that could probably be better explained by Ms. Minton, but I'll try to give my sort of brief analysis of it. It's that you have the proper seat clearance so that you're of the size to be able to sit on the ATV properly, that you are of a size to be able to brake the ATV and operate the brakes that the vehicle has, that you have the size, the proper posture and handlebar grip that you're able to steer the ATV. It's a relatively straightforward concept, and after much discussion with ATV users, they felt the best thing to do, and this is actually for children, is that are mainly focused on children because those would be the ages, is that this authority would be given to state parks to work with the groups and by rule designate some of these requirements. At the same time, we've always stated very clearly in these hearings on the Senate floor that best rider fit will not be based on such factors as weight of the vehicle, the speed that the vehicle is able to attain, or the CC, displacement size of the engine. None of those things have anything to do with best rider fit. There are people that might have interest in those items, but that is not what we're describing with best rider fit. What we are describing is the ability to safely operate the vehicle. The requirements that are in this bill will only apply to riders operating on public land, including private lands that are open to the public as a result of funding from the state parks ATV account. There is also an amendment that will be before you that gives an exception to operators who are using the ATV exclusively for farming, agriculture, forestry, nursery, and Christmas tree growing. This is a commitment that we made specifically to the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, who came in actually during the bill's final day of consideration in the Senate committee, and we made a commitment that we would amend the bill to address their concerns. And if they're not happy with this amendment, I'm more than happy to work with them on a better version of this amendment, because we made the commitment to address their concerns. I think what you have before you is one bill out of five that were in this building, four from state parks and one from me. There are different advocates for the bills. Most of the bills have died, all except for this one. This is a very collaborative effort. We were managed to bring everybody on board. A lot of people made compromises to bring a bill forward. We all recognized that ATVs and the use of ATVs is a growing sport, one shared by many families. And we also realized that there are some issues relative to safety, particularly for children, and that there is some importance in all sides coming to bear to find some ways to prevent the level of injuries that we have at this time and to hopefully prevent future deaths. This is a good compromise. I urge your support.
Any questions? Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Devlin, for doing this. I know this is a difficult issue. Senator Devlin, I notice that riders of a certain age must be supervised by an adult.
Yes.
What, supervised, do you mean riding on the same bike with them or in the same vicinity, in the same park?
The specific language used in the bill is to be able to come to the immediate direct assistance. We thought that that was better than actually some recommendations that had been for in-sight distance, because that would be something hard in a lot of circumstances to maintain on a continuous basis. But I would think it would be what it says, that you would be within a distance to be able to come to immediate assistance, and you would realize if something had went wrong within a relatively short period of time.
Thank you.
I should also mention, Madam Chair, Representative Tomei, one of the reasons why we decided that it was actually best for the supervising adult to also have gone through the training and have the operator's permit, or to be a very experienced rider, is one of the areas where we recognize that there may be an issue is where parents who are not familiar with ATVs, have never ridden ATVs, go out and buy, you know, a 350cc or 325cc for a kid, probably more in my area of Oregon than in either Representative Gilliam's or Representative Smith's area, but put their kids on this not knowing what the full potential is. And by having the operators also, the supervising adult having the training, at least they would realize what some of the safety requirements are for the ATV and what some of the potential impacts are.
Representative Buckman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator, I was going to ask you a question because I'm busy trying to look up the statute. Maybe you can do a shortcut for me. How does an adult or child obtain a Class 1 all-terrain vehicle permit, operator permit? Is there a test involved at the DMV?
Well, that's been discussed with state parks. I believe they would set up that in accordance with the statute. There's an interesting thing here that, Madam Chair, Representative Buckley, often when we talk about things like this, the first question that comes up is how you're going to pay for this. That is not the first question here because we actually collect a number of ATV-related taxes and fees, and we have the money to pay for the program. And many of the ATV users, all that I've spoken to since this bill has passed out, favor that expenditures. But they would develop the program. I think the hope would be that for adults, it might be more like the boating program that we have for the Oregon Marine Board, which might be even online. For children, we would like to actually have some hands-on experience. So I think that decision would be up to State Parks and the State Parks Board.
Thank you very much.
No other questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. I guess I'll just go down the list. Barrett Brown. Randy Nicolay and Lindy Minton, if you want to just all come up. And start, just identify yourself.
Oh, sure. I'm Chair Beyer, representatives. Appreciate the chance to be here. It's an honor to speak to you. My name is Barrett Brown. I'm with the Oregon Motorcycle Riders Association, land use and legislative volunteer. The OMRA has worked since 1972 to promote and preserve the responsible use of motorcycles and ATVs in Oregon. I think Senator Devlin did a perfect job of hitting the highlights of the bill and describing the Rider Fit program. I won't repeat some of the good statements he made, but with regard to the ATV community and the support and participation in the development of 101, I think it's really a remarkable bill. Most of the time we spend fending off regulations, onerous, ill-conceived, over-regulation, and here we find ourselves in league with, as been described, a bipartisan kind of across-the-board support for what will be a really productive youth safety bill. Wanted to add, of course, the key element to this is this concept of rider fit, making sure that youth riders are on a machine that fits them, that's suited for them. This really comes from a laboratory that's been at work at various states across the country, and including programs like the 4-H that have been digesting and developing what is a really effective rider fit program. This is not an ad hoc arrangement that a few of us have sketched out on a napkin. This is shopping for best practices around the country, and the heart of this Rider Fit program will come through state parks in administrative rule, coming from this really good history of youth safety and Rider Fit programs. I wanted to add also to Senator Devlin's comments in regard to a question about safety training, another extremely important part of this bill. State parks and the OHV community have been waiting to see what comes out of 101 when we know what this looks like. We're poised and ready with a pretty extensive partnership of rolling out a safety training program. I should say this safety training program exists today. It's just it's been hard to apply to a very good rule. Now that we'll have this Rider Fit program, you'll see state parks and the OHV community working together to make sure there are training centers, facilities, and programs across the state that can meet that need. And we're excited about this. If there's any questions about the OMRA or our position, I'd be happy to answer.
We'll just go. I have a senator in the back of the room. If he would like to come up and testify, and then
terrific.
We'll.
Terrific.
Should we all go, or just?
I will take the mic. Sometimes you sit in the back room for a reason.
I know. You know, it's really a hard call here whether you want to offend the senator or whether you're just helping him. So.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Rick Metzger, State Senator, District 26, and in this case, Chair of House Transportation, or Senate Transportation. I just wanted to take a moment to come in today during your testimony, and particularly for the witnesses you have before us, to commend them for their very hard work, Ms. Minton and others. I don't think it's unrealistic to compare the fact that in our committee this year, the most two contentious bills we had were that regarding the Real ID Act and the legislation that is before you today. I think it was a real process to understand all the various issues involved, but what I really want to do is commend the people who are before you today, who I think when we had our first committee hearing was not exactly a kumbaya of people testifying before the committee, but there was one thing, the one common thread that went throughout the discussion is that there was a lot of important concern, yes, emotion, but legitimate interest in doing the right thing, not only for riders of ATVs, but also the families that enjoy those, and also the protections of the riders and others who participate in this sport. And I think there's always, as we all know, I think a real tension between the regulator and the regulated, and suspicion of both. And we certainly started off, and my committee started off with that, and you could tell that by the questions that went on through the course of the session. But what I really am pleased about is that, and Senator Devlin is to be commended for his diligence too, I told him we were going to get something out of committee, and we needed to keep working at it, and making sure the stakeholders were together, because it was clear that in the testimony, they shared a lot of the same interests. The question was, what was some of the solutions to get there? And I think the two citizens that are sitting next to me today, and you'll hear from them, really need to commend it because they, you know, put down some of their concerns, some of their apprehensions, I think, about you know, what's this like with state government coming in and telling us about what we're going to do, and it was able to help educate, I think, not only the committee but everyone else, and with state parks and their cooperation. So that you have a product for you today. I will tell you that I'm sure they will say the same, that this is the beginning of a partnership. I don't, you know, certainly is not going to be the end, but I think it really does represent the best in getting together and understanding an area that perhaps we don't personally understand, and people who, though, are committed to having a result that improves safety, that improves participation, certainly understanding. And I can't tell you that there's probably any citizens that I've worked with than we have this session to take such polarizing views and bring them together so they are here before you today supporting the legislation that is before you. And hopefully this will be the beginning of a partnership that will continue as we learned. I mean, I learned a lot about rider fit versus specific, you know, CC requirements and ages and started to understand the difference. And safety wasn't always what someone thought in their own mind, but you start learning from people who are committed to providing safety and understanding the realities. And I think this is a beginning. I'm glad that we have the issue before you today. Senator Devlin, again, is to be commended for continuing to work on this issue, and we're pleased that we're able to move that through, and especially with the state parks and most notably the two people in front of you today. That's all I have to say, Madam Chair, unless you have some questions, but we're really pleased to have that here today, and I think it is going to be the beginning of a lot safer environment for, you know, families and individuals who participate in this sport.
Thank you. I don't see any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Hello, my name is Lindy Minton. I'm a mom, and I live in Scio, Oregon. I have three children, two of whom are still at home and riding with our family. And the way this bill has an impact on us is simply my children are quite tall for their age, and the smaller bikes that they would have been required to ride in Senate Bill 49 would have been no less than unsafe and impossible. So, with that said, this bill gives my children the opportunity to have safety training that they otherwise cannot have through the ASI program. The ASI program is very much like Senate Bill 49. It restricts children based on age to the size or the cc of an ATV. So for my children to take this training, they would have to be able to fit on these small bikes. My daughter is 11, and she's 5'7". She's adult-sized. She's quite tall for her class. She would be on a 50cc bike. That would be like asking you all to take the training on, oh, probably not a tricycle, but the next step up. It just clearly wouldn't work. I would like for my children to have the opportunity to participate in a training program. I think that it will bring cohesion with the groups, because it is our intent to continue to work with Parks and Recreation very closely in developing a training program that works for our children. Parks and Rec originally had intended to have only online, and the user groups came back and said, look, you know, we need something that's going to work. You can't just have a kid sit in front of a computer for a few minutes and call it good. We need to involve the parents. The parents need to be at the training with the child. The parent is essentially the ongoing teacher of these children. But we have to somehow get across to these parents who aren't getting it any other way. That internal alarm doesn't go off. They don't read the brochures. They don't read the newspaper. They have the excuse that they didn't know and that they didn't realize there was a danger to riding an ATV. We need to get across to them that supervision is key, and a training program will allow us the avenue to do that. Rider Fit is a very good program. It has been nationally acknowledged for years. I couldn't go back far enough to find out when, but 4-H uses it. Several different states use that, but what is so funny is when we were looking at legislation in other states to base some of our ideas on, we found that the concept of Rider Fit is there, but the legislation for Rider Fit is not. Utah is a good example. They are a Rider Fit state, but they are looking at us saying, we don't have the legislation. We have the concept, and we use it in our training, but we really, truly don't have the legislation. We have the American Motorcycle Association and the ATVA, they're looking very closely at the legislation that we're doing now. They're fully in support. They want supervision. They want rider training. They want rider fit. I could go into the long history of why we are all messed up with HCC, but it's really not significant at this point. The point is there was legislation or a consent decree in 1986 because of the three-wheelers that have us where we are now with something that isn't working. We're getting beyond that. We are setting a stage, and I hope that this legislation will make it through, have the support of essentially probably everyone in this group, and we can continue to work as a group and really set a precedent nationwide for ATV safety. Other than that, if you guys have any questions, I'm more than happy to try to answer them for you.
Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just out of curiosity, what kind of training did your children engage in prior to starting to ride?
Unfortunately, my older son and my husband, or I should say fortunately, my older son and my husband went to the ASI training program. The manufacturers actually will pay for this training, and we will continue to encourage anyone that's eligible to continue through that program so that it isn't a cost to parks. Not only will the manufacturers pay for the course, in many instances they actually pay you to take the course. They will give you $100 if you show up, and you can, if you buy a helmet, you get a bonus. But essentially, the manufacturers are really trying hard to make it a safer sport. Unfortunately, they're bound to the old 1986 standards, which leaves out a huge segment. I believe there's like 27% of the people that actually take the mandatory safety training course. I believe a lot of reasons for that, for my children, is because my children, at the time that we got into ATVing, again, were too large to fit on the bikes that they were would be required to be. So my husband and my older son have the training, and my two younger children do not. And so this is something that, you know, I'm asking you, please support this bill, because it gives children like mine who don't fit into the box, who aren't, you know, they're too tall, they're too big, or they're too small, to be able to get the training that they need. And we'll work really hard with parks to come up with a good training program. We don't want it to be something that is so cumbersome that people are, you know, hating it. We want the online for adults to focus on environmental issues, some basic first aid, and supervision and dangers that you will find in this. It's not going to be a 12-week course or anything like that. It's going to be very much like the daughter's course. But for the children, it will be a hands-on with an adult present, because that adult is, parents are responsible for their children. I mean, it really comes down to that. And we want to involve them in the safekeeping of their children. But we have to make them aware. If obviously we failed in that awareness, then this is something that we can use to promote that awareness.
Thank you very much. And just to add a comment, Madam Chair, the statute requires the department, if when setting up the training, cannot charge a fee of over $5 from each participant. So I'm sure that will, that's an incentive for people to take training. It's not going to cost them much.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, representatives of the committee. My name is Randy Nicolay. I'm here representing ATV Ride Club. We're an organization that just recently had started up, dealing more like with land use and where to ride, but also had quite a history with our riding of ATV vehicles. I have also been an elected official and know what it's all about to have the mandates in front of you of providing safety and trying to also promote education. And here this bill is going to do both of them for you. Comments of the training. I've got my notes before you. Lindy mentioned that even though with the training that's existing right now, very few are taking opportunities to enroll in the training. And that's just with the new vehicles being purchased. That's not all the used ones being sold out there on the market too, and then not getting an opportunity to enroll in this training. Representative Tomain's comment and question earlier regarding, you know, the supervision part of it. If you can picture yourselves down in the dunes where you've got a couple of rolling hills, we kind of look at this as like zone coverage. You know, with our adults, we're out. We have kind of a perimeter we've set up for the kids. We're wanting to make sure we don't have somebody come hot rodding through and break up the family activity. And we're going to basically watch out for our children at that point. Also, as part of the training concerns that were mentioned earlier, I, too, have a very large couple 12-year-olds. One's taller than I am. She has a size 14-foot. And it doesn't fit between the front and the back fenders on the size vehicle that she would be required to take her training on. So, again, this is where Rider Fits works very well for us. That's all I have really to add.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ron Phillips, Stacy Howard, and see if I can get this right, Ed Arenello. Close. Okay, one of you can get started.
My name is Ron Phillips. I represent the Mount Baber ATV Club. That club, which is the Central Coast where it was originally founded, I know because I founded it, has spread out to the valley, and we're now about 50-50 Central Coast, Newport and Toledo, and the rest of it's the mid-valley here, and Linda is one of our members, one of our good members, I might say. We represent 1,000 riders now. We're 5 years old. We manage a 32-mile course. Call it 34 if you want. There's loops. South of Eddyville through the mountains. And we're concerned about safety. I started riding almost 40 years ago, and I was riding trail cycles at that time, and we were the Mount Baber racing team. But when it came time to rebuild an organization, and I was the one that did, I said, we don't want to be racing. We want to be riding. We want to have family fun. I have four children. This is one of them. Three sons, and we all rode together. And the only serious accident we ever had was after a flat track race, my oldest son decided to try a friend's oversized bike out. Did a high side and broke an arm, and for 6 weeks he didn't do too much. But now that's been the extent of it over almost 40 years now. We support Senate Bill 101, and the reason I'm here today primarily is to let you know that there is a very worthwhile and strong program trying to institute safety and cutting down on the injuries and the deaths on ATVs. And it's a three-part program, and you've seen it in action. The first part is the industry, the manufacturers, and the dealers, and they're doing a lot. The second part is the organizations. You heard from one here just a minute ago, and you're hearing from me now. We're all talking safety, and we're trying to get these things done. And then, of course, the third part are the riders themselves. And one of the reasons that I so strongly support Senate Bill 101 is because it is creating, formally, legally creating family groups. And the little people, we want adults out there with them and training them. By the way, when I bought my ATV, they offered to pay for a training course and pay me $50 to do it. And I thought, after all the miles I've already put in the dirt, I need a course. Yes, I did need a course, and I felt I did, because I wasn't certain about four wheels down there. Two, yes. But I was in the process of training grandchildren. I could see that that was coming. I have six of them at the moment. So I took the course so that I would know what perils to look for and how to avoid them. And I used that lesson to, as I say, teach four children to ride and six grandchildren to ride. And we've done pretty well. She can speak for herself. I won't speak for her. So I want you to know that approval of this will help put together those family groups that will help make things safer. I was a little shocked by two articles that I read in the Oregonian. Many of their facts aren't facts. It's plain wrong. But the overall tone shows that they plainly don't understand the ATV riding community. I am 77 years old. I am not a 15-year-old and a crazy, reckless person. I represent the ATV community. That 16-year-old we're trying to get calmed down does not. With that, I urge you to say yes, and I'll answer any questions.
Thank you. We'll go ahead and finish the panel. And
I'm just here as a private citizen, not representing any club, but I did grow up on recreational vehicles.
Why not? Go ahead and identify yourself.
My name is Stacy Howard.
Thank you.
And I do have six children that have been riding ATVs since they were very young. And my first reaction to anything that legislates more rules about how we do things tends to be negative. And I think a lot of the people who go out and get hurt on ATVs are doing really stupid things, and you can't legislate common sense. On the other hand, my children were taught very well, and we were taught as children how to be safe. And my father, before he let the kids get on the ATVs, he made sure they knew what they were doing. He made sure they fit. He made sure that they were using common sense, and so they were supervised. My kids had to go to training to get hunter safety cards so that they could carry a rifle. They had to get driver's permits when they got to that age. And so even though I am reluctant to endorse legislation that limits us, I still think that this is a bill that most people can get on board with because it makes sense. And it follows through with a principle that we've already established, that in order to be safe, we need to train people, and we need to do it with established programs. And I also support the part of the bill that says we need to fit the kid to the bike and or to the ATV and not just have some blanket size. I have a 13-year-old son who weighs 102 pounds and is very slight and short, and he's a much more competent rider than his 15-year-old sister, who is more my size. I would expect them to do different things and to be allowed to ride different bikes based on those competencies. And so I think that you have to have leeway in there. You can't legislate everything to an exactness. And so I think this bill tries to give a common sense approach, and in that makes it much more palatable to those of us who prefer our freedoms as much as possible.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Great, Madam Chair, Representatives, thank you for the privilege of sitting here today. I'm Ed Arnold. I'm a father, parent, a 15-year-old, a 14-year-old, and a 4-year-old. Just turned four. One of my daughters just turned four at the dunes camping. Started ATVing or riding with us safely right after she was born. My wife's choice, not mine. I didn't force it. It wasn't a prenuptial agreement or anything. We've been riding ATVs or motorcycles off and on for about 6 years, so I'm really a relative newcomer. And this whole activity is fascinating to me. I went from having nothing but bicycles and pedaled vehicles to having a weekend warrior and six quads and two motorcycles and at 42, my first rotator cuff surgery. But that wasn't an accident that happened anywhere on public lands. I was competing for some insane reason. But we participate as a family, and at some time when my 15 or 14-year-old are eligible, based on my rules, my supervision rules, they may be able to participate in the activity on their own. But as to date, I'm still a nervous father. I was nervous this weekend for 3 days, and it was perfectly safe out there, and I just watched and watched and stayed and stayed, and that's just my thought. I represent over 20 very close families. If you get into this sport, like any other sport, you go from being a guest to being the leader to being how many people are going camping this weekend and what are you bringing, and it could be fishing rods or kayaks. I'm also a business person, very familiar through operating a $300 million a year company here in Oregon with the hunter safety course lines and the onboarding of the Marine Safety Program and how that worked with the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary and several of my friends with that group and several of the instructors of Hunter Safety. So I'm familiar with safety training, what works, what doesn't work. And I also am president of the OMRA, the Oregon Motorcycle Riders Association. And I represent thousands of riders in Southwest Washington and in Oregon and dozens of clubs. And these people either participate in competitive events, family events, or they just come and they participate. And they're either members or they just participate in our activities. So we represent a large usage base. I think that it is crazy, as been mentioned earlier, that we are all sitting here as enthusiasts and we're all saying, hey, yes, we have listened, and governing this activity is a good thing. I think that governing the safety of the activity is a good thing. And the reason that that's true is it's natural for us to support safety. Adult supervision and accountability, who wouldn't? Providing and ensuring proper and accessible training, such as the Marine training and hunter safety, like my son just went through, absolutely essential. Proper training even attracts new people. I saw dozens of fathers, including myself, sign up for hunter safety training because of the quality of the training and what it offered. People that had hunted for years. That, too, can be true with this activity. just as was mentioned earlier here. To provide safe rider fit and use, absolutely essential. If any of us have participated in any sport, any activity, anything, fitting the tool is important. It's more important than any other rule we can make up. One kid can play a video game and the father can't. One kid can act on a tricycle and another child shouldn't be on one, and so on and so forth. I just watched my four-year-old able to operate a John Deere plastic motorized tractor, and I was so impressed because the first couple of times 2 years ago when her mother bought it prematurely, all it did was run into trees. Well, you wouldn't want that to happen on an ATV. And so this is a necessary policy. Ultimately, this bill actually does provide for the citizens, for the public, for business, and for communities. Communities like what's happening in Morrill County, the huge growth that's happening there and the support for the whole mechanism of ATVing and OHV activity that can revive a community, that can really bring forth safe family recreation, which actually, if we were to step outside this building and go into the neighborhoods, we might find that safe family activities were missing. And that might be what's missing. So this does add to that. Without taking partnership actions such as this, we could very well be facing too much governance, too long of a governing period of trying to figure out who's right, who's wrong. The laws could become too stringent and too tight with no regard to what the users are about or what the citizenship and the population of the state is. And you're hearing from the citizenship here. So it's because of this and that we believe in safe supervision, accountable supervision, education, training, safe rider fit, and really a safe sport. The safe growth of the sport and growth in our communities and the recreation we love, that we, the OMRA, do support this bill. And we hope that it also paints the path to better rider fit and a future of cooperating on these events in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the panel? Seeing none, thank you. Tim Wood and Kylene. I guess we just get the one.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kylene Stone. I'm Assistant Director for Recreation Programs and Planning at Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. Since Senator Devlin summed up the bill so well, I just want to point out a couple of things. Jim's handing out my written testimony to you right now. And we are here seeking your support for Senate Bill 101A through the proposed A6 amendment. Real quickly, as that's being passed out, the effects of this bill, again, include requiring ATV and dirt bike riders to complete safety training, establishing standards to ensure that young drivers only operate machines that appropriately fit their bodies and that they can control, requiring adult supervision for young drivers, and requiring each vehicle operator to possess a permit to operate ATVs and dirt bikes on public land. And we do believe this bill will improve safety outcomes for riders and their passengers on Oregon's public lands. In answer to Representative Buckley's question earlier, the safety training intents of this bill are accomplished through added requirements that all ATV and dirt bike operators who operate vehicles on public land hold valid operator permits issued under ORS 390-570 and 390-575, and that's a OPRD-enabling statutes. To receive an operator's permit under this statute, a person must complete safety training courses as established by OPRD. Under current law, to ride an ATV or dirt bike on public land, a person may either have an operator permit or hold a valid driver's license or be accompanied by a licensed operator over 18. So this law changes all of that and would require all operators have those permits. Just a quick little history about how we got where we're at from the agency perspective. We took over the ATV account and grant program in parks in 1990. And we've heard consistent claims over the years from ATV enthusiasts that the existing capacity to offer training that's needed to receive our permits is insufficient. In 2006, we commissioned a study with Oregon State University to conduct an assessment of our safety program. And for the hearing record, we've provided you with a summary of the recommendations in that report. OSU looked at all existing but extremely limited ATV and dirt bike safety statistics in Oregon, reviewed best practices from other states, and conducted a series of surveys with subject area experts. They also surveyed providers of existing private nonprofit safety training courses in the state. Training courses for ATVs are provided by the ATV Safety Institute. I think you've heard people mention ASI. That's what they're referring to. And training courses for dirt bikes are provided by the Motorcycle Safety Foundation Dirt Bike School. Both of these nonprofit organizations receive their primary funding from the all-terrain vehicle manufacturers. In the course of research, however, researchers learned that amongst these two organizations, there are only 27 ATV and only 14 dirt bike instructors to serve all of Oregon's 40,000-plus riders. Simply put, there are not enough instructors to provide adequate OHV training in Oregon. Initially, as we were crafting the legislation at OPRD, we were anticipating that we would institute a program modeled after the Marine Board program that would be strictly online. However, as we've worked countless hours with advocates and other people who have an interest in this, there has been sort of a consensus that there needs to be an online, or there needs to be a hands-on component to the training as well as an online component for, particularly for young people. So we will at OPRD be developing both a hands-on and a online training program. We will also work with ASI and the Motorcycle Foundation, independent dealers, ATV enthusiasts, safety experts to develop this cadre of hands-on training capacity. And as was mentioned in earlier testimony, our budget does include resources to accomplish all of this. The other thing that is a reality for us from a management perspective is because there is such a huge need and there are so many ATV riders in the state, we're going to need to phase in the requirements of for people to have this training, and the statute does account for that. And finally, as a result of OSU research, we've started collaborating with the Department of Human Services, Division of Health Services, and with various law enforcement agencies to accomplish better crash reporting and find out better statistics related to Oregon about the impact of injuries and deaths that are related to ATV recreation. And hopefully with better reporting of these deaths and injuries, we will be able to measure the effectiveness of our safety training and make adjustments as necessary over the years. And finally, we plan to allocate additional ATV funds to law enforcement agencies to assist in the enforcement of these new provisions. So with the addition of A6 amendments, which was requested by the agricultural interests in the work session in Senate bill in the Senate, this bill will be ready to be referred to Ways and Means Committee for further action. And the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department respectfully requests your support for passing Senate Bill 101. And I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Seeing Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering about the capacity question in terms of training this huge number of riders. How do you anticipate going about this?
Madam Chair, Representative Buckley, we have a budget package, and we will be hiring additional staff to coordinate this effort. And we've already been working with the ATV advocacy community, the Independent Dealers Association, and we've begun conversations with some of the training entities to start this process. And that's part of why we need a little bit of a phase-in schedule, because we don't have every answer to every question yet.
But I anticipate it's we statewide offered in different locations around the state.
Madam Chair, Representative Buckley, that's correct, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gary Sargent and Terry DeWitt. And try not to go over everything that everybody said.
Do I look long-winded?
I hope not.
The chair looks short-tempered, I mean.
Madam Chair, representatives of the House Transportation Committee, my name is Gary Sargent. I come before you as Vice President of the Oregon Independent Automobile Dealers Association, Legislative Committee member, dealer, power sports dealer, and as a rider since the 1960s. I know I don't look that old. This is one of the first times of my involvement with the political process, and I've been involved in many, where the powers to be, Senator Devlin, Senator Metzger, state parks, the riding community, and other entities put our arms and lock them together and have come up with an absolute positive resolve I can speak from really personal expectation and definition of what education will do. As a member of the Oregon Independent Automobile Dealers Association, years ago we were required to start taking education classes to try to clean up our industry. After mandatory, and I stress mandatory, hours of education, our industry dropped off the Attorney General radar. They've now thrown us back in with new car dealers so that we still have some stature in their top 10 list. But that education alone has improved our industry. Warning labels on the ATVs that I sell and other dealers sell, they are just that. They're warning labels that are there for the responsible parent to administer guidelines. That's about all that a dealer or manufacturer could do, is we're not riding along with that individual or that family. This legislation is actually cutting edge. I've talked to several other dealers across the United States, one in Salt Lake City, Utah, that was Utah's laws were mentioned, and I explained to him what we are working on here, and he was so impressed that he's going to try to take it forward to their legislature and piggyback onto this type of legislation. This is an effort that is embraced by all entities, and I strongly urge you to pass this forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Terry DeWitt. I'm here from Northwest Quad Riders Club. I'd like to say that I support 101A. With all new laws and regulation, there comes enforcement. In one of the prior public hearings, it was asked of a trooper, how do we enforce our current laws? The trooper says, how do I tell how old a child is? They do not carry ID. So when you throw out the age requirements and the CC requirements, move on to rider fit, if a trooper sees a child with his legs poking out to the side on a great big giant quad, he can go, you don't fit. Doesn't matter how old he is, but he does not fit. Hence, he can go over and say, where's your parents? Get on a quad that fits you. You're not supposed to be riding this one. That said, I'm not going to go on any longer. I support this bill and hope it moves forward.
Thank you. don't see any questions. April McVeigh and Monty King.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. I'm April McVeigh with Oregon Power Sports Association, representing ATV dealers in the Oregon area. We represent the bill. We are in support of the bill. We really think that it's going to do good for the industry with the things that everybody said. So please vote yes on the bill, and let's get some good results.
Thank you.
Monty King, President of Oregon Vehicle Dealer Association. It's been a very likable process, bringing all our friends together, the writers, the businesses and legislators and the government officials. You know, we represent the businesses on the coast or wherever they are. This is a good bill for the communities. This is a good bill for the writers. Let's just move on and what everybody else said.
Thank you. I guess I do have a question. During the public process that passed this out, was there anybody who actually testified against the final product?
Madam Chair, not to my knowledge. I didn't even hear anybody saying anything against it in the back room in the back of the room, or I'm going to support it, but, you know, I wish we'd do better, that type of thing. I just haven't heard anything like that. I have, you know, some members here, and I ask them, do you want to say anything? He says, no, things are going pretty good. So they, you know, they're involved with this too, and the conversations have been going around and around in the state among the dealers and all the communities and everything. This has been a very public process, I think. I haven't liked some of the media coverage and the way they've come at me and people involved. They didn't care about what was true or what wasn't true. They wanted to know, you know, what was going on in the back rooms. And there wasn't anything going on in the back rooms. That's too bad that they have to go that direction. I have not read the newspaper today, so I don't even know what was said. But I know the questions and the interviews that I've had. I didn't appreciate them. But, you know, that's the way it is. It is what it is.
Okay. Thank you. One more person here. Bev Stubbs.
Hi, my name is Bev Stubbs. I live in Salem. I'm the vice president of an ATV safety group here in Salem. Our ATV group is Salem Sand Club. I've been riding bikes, either motorcycles or ATVs, for 45 years. I've seen a lot of things change in the 20 years. This is an excellent bill. I have a grandson who is napping. he started riding at 2 1/2. On our own property, on an ATV. We did not take him out on public lands. We had to train him. He could not get training. I just got him an ATV safety course this spring break. There was 4 children between myself and one of our employees. The lady came to our own property. She gave the 4 kids our ATV safety course. My grandson had to go back down to a smaller bike than he normally rides. He had to go back to a 50 from an 80. He's a very big child. He was okay for the course, but I wouldn't recommend putting him on it. That's not what he rides. He's too big for it. I agree with 101. I've been trying to get product consumer safety to listen to me since 2001. I'm trying to do something to get rid of the old standards. I just think it's excellent. We cannot press enough for us to have safety courses, hands-on for the children. Adult supervision. Adults need to be there. None of my children, my grandchildren or my children, have ever ridden unsupervised. We have always been there with them. My daughter's 31 and my son is 26. And we have always ridden with them. My grandchildren, I have a brand-new grandson who we just acquired. He's a stepson, grandson. We've had him for about a year. He took the safety course at spring break. We just purchased a bike for him to ride because we didn't have an extra bike. I would not put that child on a bike until he had training, and my son is an excellent stepfather. He makes sure that child knows how to handle that bike. So I am 4101. Our Salem Sand Club is 4101. We're all about safety. The kids need the courses. We need adult supervision. And as far as training the kids, there's a lot of our club members who are more than willing to step up and become instructors so that we can help get the training for the kids.
Thank you. Questions? Seeing none. Thank you. And thank everybody for coming. I appreciate it.
Before we close, Madam Chair, could I ask a question? And maybe somebody here can respond. Maybe somebody from the Parks Department. Regarding the assessment, and I just want to make sure that I'm reading this clearly on page, I guess that would be 234. Oregon lacks the training infrastructure to support this ambitious effort. The ASI program has been in place for more than 18 years and claims only 70 certified instructors in Oregon. For 110,000 users under the age of 18, it would take 7 to 10 years and cost $10 million to put this together. Could somebody respond to that? And I'm wondering, I mean, I haven't heard anybody talking about that today. I think people have been assuming that this training would be almost immediately available, even though I know the bill doesn't take effect until January of 09. But it seems like people are assuming the training would take effect right away. And from looking at this, it seems like that's not the case. And that this must also go to Ways and Means and has a $10 million price tag. I mean, that's a lot of money.
Madam Chair, Representative Tomei, the $10 million price tag was an estimate that OSC researchers put on it. We, however, believe that we can put something together that won't be as expensive. We won't be able to start on July 1st. Obviously, we don't have something, you know, already programmed and ready. But our anticipation is that we'll be able to develop the online section of the training program first, and make sure we cover the widest number of people initially, and then as we're developing that, we'll also begin developing the hands-on cadre of trainers, which could include volunteer-level trainers, and we've been working a lot with the motorcycle and the ATV organizations to start to put together a group that could help us form that sort of train-the-trainers approach initially. So the reality is it will be a big challenge for us, and we're anticipating that from the Parks Department. And it was why our initial legislative concept wasn't as ambitious as what you see on here, but we do believe that we can accomplish it, and there is some potential that we might have to come to an emergency board at some point in the future to request additional ATV funds if it costs us more to secure the services of qualified trainers. But at this point, we are hopeful that we can accomplish it.
Follow up. Thank you. I know this equipment is very expensive, and we heard some from the dealers, et cetera. And, I mean, I keep thinking about $10 million, and we're getting to the point where we're looking at the whole state budget. I mean, that's a lot of money. And I'm wondering if it wouldn't be appropriate to put a fee on when somebody purchases this or goes for a license or a permit or whatever, so that it would be self-sustaining and not relying on general fund money to pay for.
Madam Chair, Representative Tomei, the program right now is not funded with general fund at all. It's funded from gasoline taxes that are applied to the ATV operation itself, so for the gas that they buy when they participate in recreation. And then also they pay a $10 two-year permit fee to ride on public lands in this state. And at this point, the amount of cash in that fund is ample. There are a lot of ATV riders in the state, and the fund is doing well. So I don't anticipate that we would get ourselves in a position of needing general fund support for this at all. The other, option over time would be to look at the $5 charge. I mean, if it got to that point and there needed to be a fee assessed for the training itself to the participants, that would be something that we could look at over time.
That certainly seems minimal. And if I can, one last thing. On the last page of this report, it said the most serious problem in OHV safety is not the lack of basic skills on the part of the operators, but from the lack of accountability and poor decision-making. So as we heard testimony today about the children, I mean, I heard about one 11-year-old girl who's 5'7", which is taller than I am, and how it would be inappropriate for her to use a small machine. And yet I think of a young child, 11 years old, their sense of accountability is not very developed at that point. So the idea of a large child who was still a child driving a machine that would be large and have a lot of power behind it is somewhat daunting. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Madam Chair, Representative Tomei, I think that is sort of one of the issues of debate throughout the legislative process, and it's an area where there's been compromise on both sides. Really where I think the best fit guidelines are going to apply probably more than the kid who's too big riding a bike that's too small, it's going to be children who are too small won't be able to fit on a bike that's not big enough for them, and therefore they won't be able to ride because they're too small to ride it, an existing, any kind of existing bike. So that's really where the protections are going to lie in this particular setup.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 101, and I'm not moving it today. I have another group that had some interest in testifying, so it will be back up probably early next week. So I'm also going to carry over Senate Bill 1022 until Wednesday. But I do want to go ahead and reconsider the I'll go ahead and read my script here. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 219 and would take a motion to reconsider the previous vote.
Madam Chair, I move to reconsider the vote by which Senate Bill 219 was sent to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Tomei moves that we reconsider the vote by which Senate Bill 219 was sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We are considering the vote to add a conflict amendment since Senate Bill 197 amends the same section of a statute to clarify the federal and state agencies that the Employment Department is required or allowed to disclose information to. The conflict amendment simply adds the same language we passed in Senate Bill 219 under the same newly organized statute. Any discussion? Those of the opinion we should reconsider the vote by which Senate Bill 219 was sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Buckley?
Aye.
Representative Butler?
Excuse.
Representative Gilman?
Aye.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Aye. The motion carries, and the vote has been reconsidered. Thank you, and I'm going to adjourn committee.
That brings it back before the Senate had never passed out.
Right.
So now, if you want me to just do a brief thing.
Please. Bill out today?
Back do we have the amendments?
Yes, we do.
Well, we can... can do that.
Okay.
So I apologize. I've not done this before. So
we're still under work session for Senate Bill 219.
Yes.
Okay. Madam Chair, members, you'll remember we passed out this measure last week that would allow the Employment Department to provide information to the Department of Transportation for the purposes of collecting certain debts and delinquent taxes. Since we passed our bill, Senate Bill 197, an enrolled version, which I do have a copy here for you if you'd like to look at that, passed out that reorganizes that entire section of statute. And the conflicts amendments, which you should have the dash ones, so does everyone have the dash one amendments? You'll see that this amendment would only go into effect if, in fact, Senate Bill 197 becomes law. In that case, if you look beginning on page 8, line 27, is essentially a repeat of the language that's in the original Senate Bill 219, but now it's under the new organization of the statute as it sits right now in Senate Bill 197. And I would just point out one thing, and that is on page 9, line 11, when I carefully kind of scrutinized this language as opposed to the language in Senate Bill 219, this goes slightly farther in that it says the Department of Transportation may not disclose any information received to any private collection agency, and then this takes a step further and it says or for any other purpose. So that was the only difference I could find in this language as opposed to Senate Bill 219. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Judith. So any questions, any concerns? Or
what does that, Madam Chair, what does that mean?
We have Mike Marsh here. Thank you.
Mike Marsh, if you want to come up.
Madam Chair, Mike Marsh, if I could get a copy of the version that the staff is looking at, maybe I could be more helpful. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I know the purpose of Senate Bill, Mike Marsh from the Department of Transportation. I know the purpose of Senate Bill 197 was to try to enhance some of the accountabilities for both Employment Department as well as agencies that use Employment Department records. And in looking at the information about 197, it added some components that we think are useful to enhance those accountabilities. So when we look at this version of 219, it says the Department of Transportation may not disclose any information received to any private collection agency or for any other purpose. I think what was discussed there was the idea that it cannot be for any other purpose except that that's approved elsewhere in this bill. So if we look at, I'm just looking for that component in the bill. Maybe staff can help where that is addressed.
In committee, I'm going to apologize. I'm going to turn it over to vice chair, and I have to leave the building.
The chair has left the building.
Bye.
Bye.
May not disclose information. Okay, pardon me, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair. Just taking a look at the final change here. I believe the intent is that we may not disclose this information to any private collection agency or for any other purpose other than that is discussed in the bill. In other words, for the collection of delinquent taxation. So that's what I'm understanding this is saying. The fact that it doesn't say it says for any other purpose. I think what it's getting at is that it can't be disclosed to anybody else, but we can use it for that purpose. So that's how I'd read it. We can't disclose the information to anyone. We can use it for our own purposes.
Okay, other questions?
I'm very uncomfortable with this, Mr. Chair. I'd rather we didn't pass this today.
We don't have to pass
okay,
it today.
Good.
Because it's back before us now. It's back in the possession of the committee, so we can wait.
Just
wait. Want to carry it over till Wednesday?
That way, and Mike, if you would, check it out to make sure the verbiage is...
Madam Chair, I mean, Mr.
We
Chair.
We don't want you to pass the information on to anyone else, but the reason we're doing this is so you can use the information.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mr. Chair, I agree. I'll talk with the Employment Department and make sure about their intent of 197 as it relates to us, and then we can make sure we're all solid.
Great.
So my name is carry over on the work session is about 219 to Wednesday.
So we're carrying this over until Wednesday.
Mr. Chair, I have a quick question.
Yes. Yeah.
Is that tie really necessary?
Mr. Chair, I guess the answer is yes. And I know I have a supporter here, so that's good. Thank you.
I close the hearing on Senate Bill 219. And any other order of business for the committee? Meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.